Hi guys, it's Blessing, and I wanted to kick off this final episode of season one by talking about my journey with Don't Drink the Pickle Juice and what it's been like to record this podcast and have these conversations with these guests. Above all, what I have found has struck me recording this podcast is how important it is that we understand that success is no accident. And the people that we look at in the world that we see as successful have actually made lots of strategic choices. And specifically, I wanted to look at hip hop because I am obviously, you know, with the future barrister elements of my personality and the other half being the hip hop head. These interests have merged together because I'm not just interested in the commercial and legal relationships that hip-hop artists have and the music industry as a whole, but I'm also interested in the actual valuation of Black culture and how important it is that we look at the fact that a multi-billion dollar industry was built on Black expression and art. That's the core of hip-hop. And so the core of this conversation in the first season, looking at hip-hop's media moguls, looking at the specific things that they've done, and looking at ultimately how they leverage the value of Black art has been fascinating. And I've loved every conversation I've had with every guest, mostly because all of these guests are in their own way, a reflection of the ambition that these moguls had. And everyone on the podcast has been a guest is, you know, ambitious and working hard. And so you can see in the conversations we have about not drinking the pickle juice, about everything that Nikki stood for when she gave that speech, are reflected in not just the guests, but also the stories we discuss. So that's the thing that, those are the things that have really been exciting and interesting for me. And I'm really excited to take this further in season two. And if there's one message that you've gotten from this entire podcast, is that know your worth and don't drink the pickle juice, because that kind of success and personal fulfillment lies on the other side of you refusing the pickle juice and backing yourself. So I hope you enjoyed this last episode, and I'll see you for season two. Bye, guys. All right, so let me introduce the lovely guests for this episode. I wanted to speak to these two gentlemen just because the knowledge of the music industry is something that I think is a really interesting topic. I like to speak to people who actually are invested, who do their research, you know, do a lot of learning around this. And these two are definitely a great example, both involved in the creative industries and are just total legends. So without further ado, I wanted to introduce our first guest, Kojo. Hi.
Yo, what's up?
So I wanted you to just tell the people about yourself and where they can find you.
Yeah, so I'm a musician in FinBlue Collective, and on Instagram we're at FinBlue, and I'm also a podcast editor at Transmission Roundhouse. So that's Transmission lowercase _RH. Is that cool?
Yeah, all good. I was just pausing because I was listening to you. Your voice is really soothing. And my second guest, Nathan Asaji. Wait, do you use your government? Okay. You actually use your government. Okay. And my second guest, Nathan Asaji. Hello.
Hi.
Could you please tell the people about you and what you do?
So I'm in PR. Trying to help companies, you know, scope their social media plans and whatnot. And on the side, I talk with Blessing all day in the flat, and we talk about music. Like sun up, sun down, free. So I thought I might as well.
All day, every day. So trust me, this is going to be a great conversation. I wanted to start the conversation by just opening up the meaning and the whole don't drink the pickle juice concept, because throughout this season, we've discussed it. But I realized that the actual don't drink the pickle juice story isn't in the episode. So in a nutshell, back in around 2010, Nicki Minaj was, you know, taping for her documentary, and she said, when a man is assertive, he's a boss, And when a woman is assertive, she's a bitch. And she was just talking about how, in her experience in the industry, by being assertive, mm-hmm. people had treated her as if, you know, oh, Nicki Minaj is so hard to work with and so on. But she said, ultimately, though, when I show up on set, if all they've got is a $50 clothes budget and sliced pickles on the floor, and I accept that, for the rest of my career, I'll be offered the pickle juice. Not drinking the pickle juice has been a central theme in the careers of our chosen moguls. So I just wanted to talk about that and just say, do you guys think, as a default, when you enter the music industry, people are going to try and shake you? Like, do you think that you need to go in with a mindset of like, this is what I want, this is what I'm about, otherwise you can't reach that mogul status?
I mean, I would say that the industry, almost in every, like, you know, Western country at least, is set up to do exactly that. I think it's designed to push the people away who necessarily don't have the means to make it, like, to the top of, like, the hierarchy musically.
Yeah.
So they focus on the major artists, and then they push down other artists as well. So in that way, you get in shag, because, like, they're only really concentrating on, you know, certain types of people. But then financially, risk of getting shagged is just incredible. And I think it's something which can happen to everybody.
Yeah, it's happened to, it's crazy when I think, like, Rihanna literally went broke. Like, the people don't remember that. Like, that actually happened. And it's happened to a lot of artists where they have had to rebuild from nothing. I mean, that classic clip of TLC saying, truth be told, we're broke. We have no money. And it's crazy. And also Tribe Called Quest, Q-Tip being like explaining that after Low End Theory dropped, you know, he was still sleeping on his mother's couch. Like, nothing had changed. But the music had gone stratospheric, but the profits for them didn't reflect.
Exactly. And actually, I just heard a bar literally yesterday from Q-Tip on that subject, and it's just like the line ended and stuff, and it's just like, record labels are always shady. He was giving that message, you know, in the 90s.
Industry rule 3080, record company people are shady.
Shady, that's the one, that's the one. That's the bar.
Is that right?
I think so.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. But the thing I want to understand is, seriously though, at what point? Because Jake, okay, if you think about Hove's position, as we talked about in episode 3 with Deliso Ngoma, Jay-Z, the blueprint billionaire, you know, he kind of still is, like, everyone still is standing on the shoulders of Jay-Z and waiting on him to be the savior for the black culture still. I feel that. And I'm like, hang on, he got started like 30 years ago. Surely in that time, we have to have finessed this system enough. Or does that just go to show the power and the strength of the music industry? Industry.
Definitely.
You know, the artists are obviously evolving, but so are the people at the top.
Yeah.
So they're making things more difficult as well.
And it makes things like streaming now quite disingenuous. Because at the beginning, especially when artists, people like Nicki Minaj were fighting for streaming to, you know, count towards sales, to count towards everything, that was great for the artists until the companies latched on and said, oh, so we can use playlists and we can do this and we can do that to get streams. Cool. So that's why they're signing artists with huge distribution deals, because they're like, actually, we can tap in to this thing. And so when you contrast that with artists like Russ, like Nipsey as well, Nipsey Hussle, who's discussed in episode 2, the Slauson Avenue mogul with Andre Carty, the streaming thing works for them, right? But it also works for the big corps. So it's like, you're right, Nathan, they adapt and they evolve. And so I'm thinking now, I think of TikTok, right? TikTok, amazing if you're a small creator, but now TikTok is bought and sold. Like, I saw TikTok on Jimmy Fallon or something. And once you see it on there, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So where do we go from there? Because most of hip hop relies on that
streaming revenue currently. It all relies on that, and that's owned by corporates. So how long are we going to be in this?
I mean, I think, you know, what Nathan said about, you know, people always adapting and people always evolve in it is so true. Like, and when you're looking at the scene right now, obviously we're looking at the TikToks and the, you know, Trillo and all those dancing apps, as they are where, you know, musicians get massive and they get a clout. But also, you know, the music industry, people are talking about, you know, NFTs now. Like, I'm not sure if you heard about them.
I have non-fungible tokens. You guys, exactly. They're really interesting. Check those out. And also check out Techish podcast. They discuss NFTs and all of the issues around it as well. So check that out with Michael and Abadesi.
Exactly. And we don't even know, like, where that's going to go. And we're still in the midst of, you know, we still are on a streaming system, like, you know, with playlists as well. Like, now they've become like an extra middleman in like the in the music industry, because playlists are super important, you know, even for like big artists. Like, they need to get on, listen to playlists. So, you know, you have all these phenomenon going on at the same time. And I think right now in the music industry, it's really hard to understand where all of this is going to go in the immediate future, especially that we're right in the middle of a pandemic where people can't perform and everything like that.
Everything's changing. The rules are that there are no more rules, and he with the most resources wins. I was reading Scott Galloway's book post-corona, and it was talking about big tech companies and how, you know, everything has to adapt. And I don't, obviously hip hop, you know, at the end of the day, hip hop is a multi-billion dollar industry, but it gets a fraction of the attention that it deserves. So when I was listening to Scott Galloway's book, I was thinking about it in the context of how hip hop has to change its marketing post-corona. And he was saying, you know, the companies that have survived are the ones that are liquid. So the ones who have the most cash in their bank account have been able to do well during the pandemic. And if you look at it in the terms of hip hop and, you know, music industry as a whole, the artists that had fan bases that they could easily monetize survived. And the ones who had to wait until the record label resource allocation came in, they had to bring the money home. I think you saw it in the fact that the artists that did get big, you know, during the pandemic pushes and shows and performances, they were the cash cows of the labels. And in the same way, big tech companies and other companies really drill down on their most profitable, you know, monetization points in the business structure. That's what the music industry said. They said, right, if you're able to make us money by entertaining people on their screen, and I think that's why the bubble right now kind of has capitalized upon what was already happening in hip hop. Because I think that once people want to go outside again, I feel the problem or the risk that could happen is that people have devalued their IP by literally oversaturating people with it. What is there left to do when, if I can do your dance and your raps were basic anyway, and I'm getting hella views on my TikTok, why would I pay to go to your concert? Like, what am I getting from that? And I think if you look at all the moguls from this season, they all know brand scarcity, and they know, like, Nicki Minaj in the modeling herself after Jay-Z went on hiatus and quote unquote retired. You know, Kanye West, he said, yeah, I'm doing music, I'll still do music, but he also has no problem making people wait for that. And teasing and anticipating. You know, Nipsey Hussle also knew the value of delaying his product. And so I wonder whether that's the mogul move, that actually it's a bit of a deceptive thing that, yes, people are having quite big gains now, but is this not just a huge bubble that's going to burst when people want to touch base with artists who actually have their feet on the earth and haven't been flooding their screens for the past year?
I guess it depends what level you are. Like Givian, for example, would you say he's a mogul, or is he in the midst of becoming a mogul? because he has to drop music now. If he doesn't, he's in trouble because he needs to get his name out. He's at that position of his career. I think like the Frank Oceans, the Jay-Z's, they can do whatever they want. They've got reserve cash, but he needs to get out there. That's why he's released another album with both his albums in one, just to get his image out there again and again.
Mm. So I guess that does fit with that sort of Scott Galloway analogy in a way, that if you've got resources, you're good. But if you don't, you have to quickly adapt. So going back to that, and before we get on to the conversation about Drake, do we think, I mean, music industry companies are huge. There's only about four. So in terms of resources, and I'm actually, I admit that I don't know enough about this and I'm going to research it, but in terms of resources, how much cash do you think record companies actually have?
I think, say, Migos, they made about 50 mil in music. I don't think the record label is going to be making 50 mil as well. I think they'll probably be making 250, 300 on top of that.
Yeah, they'll be making a lot more. Yeah. I always say this, if you see an artist making it, like times it by 10, that's how much probably the label makes.
They're rinsing these artists.
Rinsing. And I don't know, like, I hate the rinse. I don't want my hip-hop rinsed to me. No, I want a classic album. I'll go back and listen to it. Like, just, I don't care when it drops. As long as when it drops, it's solid. Do you know what I mean? And I don't feel like this new era of hip-hop values that type of consumer. Okay, so on that point, moving forward, obviously, clearly there are a lot of interests that are involved in music industry decision-making, in moves artists made. I think that Give Me an Example was a great one because it does go to show that above all, you have to be smart and innovative. If you aren't backed by big money, you've got to be smart and innovative. And I wonder now, looking at our final mogul that we were going to look at this season, Aubrey Drake Graham, I wanted to open up this discussion by saying, I feel like Drake is kind of like the acceptable industry plant in a way. Like, he is very industry, but he, I feel, pursues that out of a sense of duty to his team. And I think that makes him different to the other moguls in a way. So I just kind of wanted to see what people thought about that.
Yeah. What do you mean by industry?
I mean that Drake gets distribution rollout. Drake drops and it's every cover on every Spotify playlist. It's on every billboard. You're going around London. Drake's got huge ad placement. He gets budget. So budget is spent when money is made back. And I feel when people have tried to use that as a diss against Drake, I don't think it really is. Because in the same way, I feel someone like, I mean, they're independent in that way. They own themselves. But someone like MJ, right? MJ is going to get supersonic promo. Because no matter what money the label makes back, even if they're only making back 20%, the 20% is still such a sick margin that they don't mind. So that's what I mean by Drake is like an acceptable industry plant, because he's a plant in that he has roots that spread. Like not a lot of people make money, as in he makes money for a lot of people. Because as long as you've got a little bit of Drake stock, it's going to work out for you. Like, it's a good stock to invest in, right? Consistent, well-funded, brings back good yields. So because of that, he's an industry favorite in my view. And it's shown, like, he is an industry darling, like, whether or not he likes them, like, he'll speak out about stuff, and he's not exactly a fan, he's not sucking up, but they still love Drake, because Drake makes a lot of people a lot of money. So that's what I mean about, he kind of bears that as his thing, and says, all right, I have more than just me to consider, I have a whole team to go and work for. And I think that's how he feels. At least that's how he comes across to me in the music. So I just want to see what people thought.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I think Drake definitely comes across as somebody who, at this point, knows his brand, like, to a T, knows his worth as well, you know, commercially. Like, insanely well. But I mean, I think all that to me just suggests that he kind of uses the industry as much as the industry uses him.
Yeah.
And
I feel that way.
And it's always kind of made me like almost like I'm not one of those people. I don't like necessarily think, Drake, he's always in your face. Like he's always promoting his new dance. Like, I don't really care. I'm like, if the music slaps, it slaps. So like, I mean, he obviously consistently can make hits and he knows that he can. So he's going to get that consistent budget. But I mean, I think in terms of like, you know, him being industry plant and whether he, you know, actually, if he did accept that pickle juice, I think it's not really that simple for him. I feel like he maneuvered well, and I think he planned his journey so well that he knew that he needed like the endorsement of these like major labels, of these major artists as well. And like I think he's a perfect example of somebody who can like levy the power of the industry, as well as, you know, the scene and his essentially his kind of like, you know, his peers. He's been able to muster up all of that into something which benefits him and other people, and just keeps people all around satisfied. Like, nobody can like hate Drake viscerally because he hasn't done anything. Like, you know what I mean? He's not out here like. Yeah. I mean, we can have a discussion.
That is his brand though, and he has protected that extremely well.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entirely separate discussion, but yeah.
But I don't think you align Drake with Universal, really. As a listener, you're aligning with OVO.
Yeah.
And that's, those two are completely separate in my mind.
I know, but I think that's the team I refer that Drake works for.
So they're a separate team though, but they're their own hub. And this is why when he breaks away from Universal, they'll be doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Universal need him way more than he needs them, which is an anomaly when it comes to artists. I don't think there's any artist that like labels rely on the artists like that.
Weekend? You think Republic's got enough other artists?
Yeah, I'd say so.
They got Ariana Grande. Who else they got?
Yeah, and The Weeknd's a pop artist. Nicki Minaj. I think he needs them to shape his career where he's gone now. I think Drake tells Universal what he's doing and then they just give him the money.
Yeah.
He's got his own vision and he's doing his own thing.
Yeah, that's the same kind of relationship Nicki has with Republic. I think that's a Young Money sort of thing that's sort of built in. So when I'm saying Drake works for his team, I mean that Drake is aware that, you know, putting in shifts for the label means resource flow for the team. You know, putting in shifts for the work means resources for the team. Getting the team on the credits means resources for the team. Like, I think Drake thinks like that. And that's not necessarily the same as other moguls in this who, I mean, to be fair, to an extent, that's what Jay-Z did. But I think for a lot of moguls, it's a combination of solopreneur, like solo entrepreneur, with good connections. I think that's kind of how it comes across with most of hip hop's like Big Cash King. Like, it's like, okay, you were out for yourself, but you networked well. Whereas Drake is like very much a we're here, we're up kind of thing. And then if he talks about himself, it's like, okay, now everything else is straight. I can get back to me. And I think that's why his brand has managed to stay so strong and no one's really got a problem with him, because who's going to have a problem with someone that looks out for their friends, or at least is perceived to do that? That's why I've seen the most nasty Drake rumors. I think the most pervasive ones are things like that he steals music, he doesn't support his artists, like, because that's stuff that directly contradicts the brand. I always think if you want to know what someone's brand is, look at the rumors about them and then look at what the reverse of that is. That's their brand, because rumors are maliciously designed. So I always find that was why, you know, with the Pusha T thing, that was quite a selfish thing for Drake to do. So selfish isn't really associated with Drake. And that's why it was such a, you know, it was, you know, a poke in his Achilles heel, because it was like he had to now explain to the world, I'm not a selfish person, which was really weird to see Drake have to do, because no one had ever really questioned him on that the entire time. And that part of it, so this whole conversation, let's jump into this. So essentially Drake's contract it's coming up time to see what his next moves are going to be. Will he stay with his major, Universal, or will he jump straight in with OVO, make everything independent on his own? And this is going to be a selfish decision Drake is going to make. Arguably, it could be said staying with the major is kind of selfish because Drake signed to the major. OVO isn't signed to the major. Technically.
I think OVO is signed.
Is he signed? Is it Drake plus his extras?
So on his recent releases on Spotify, it doesn't say UMG, it says OVO.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's interesting. Okay, well then, that's not a factor then. But what I was trying to say is that this is a time where Drake can make a very selfish decision against the backdrop of an era, you know, entitled Certified Lover Boy, you know, the love hearts and stuff like that. Do you think he's teasing that that's over and he's going to be all about him now? What do you think that's saying about him? Or, because the way I see it, I'm like, you're not gonna sing more love songs to us again, are you? Surely not. Like, what are you gonna do now?
Music wise.
No, like, you know, with the narrative, because Drake is actually capable of telling us things. Yeah, so because Drake is actually capable of saying something to us, I feel like the question for me is what's left for him to say. Like, I mean, that not to say there's nothing left to say. I'm saying that I feel the next message has to be about him.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, do you think it needs to be about him in particular or about, like, just his brand? Because I think he could do a lot in terms of, you know, similar to what Jay-Z has done in terms of black business and showing people, you know, how to just own themselves fully.
He's never done that. So I mean, that fits into, making it about him. Like, you know, just because that's focusing on his knowledge and expertise, for example. But I just don't know. I've never seen Drake do anything like that, or I missed it. I mean, I know he does it. Like, he's in the Mogul mixtape, which I made for the podcast. I'll link it as well, you guys. Like, he does give advice. He does say, but I've not seen him do that yet with his platform.
But I think that's the thing. Like, I mean, I feel... So you go ahead, Nathan.
Sorry. I felt that, like, a Lemon Pepper Freestyle was sort of him getting his Jay-Z bag. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, giving people a little insight, and I think that's where he's gonna go now. But with his career and where it's at, Jay-Z wasn't doing the things that Drake was doing at this point. Like, Jay-Z was retiring, I think, when he was 35. I think about
this. Oh, because Jay-Z was trying to just go out, like, hit the peak and then bounce.
Yeah, and then Drake, now he's coming back and he's got a new album. He's saying this is gonna change music again, like views. Like, views people didn't get, but now they still listen to it. He's saying this is gonna be the same sort of environment, basically the same sort of sound.
I mean the thing that really stood out for me for Views, just talking about like the elements he brings in, was that they wanted to reflect the cold gray of Toronto. I was like, because I love color messaging and I hear things in colors, so when he said that, it made perfect sense and I loved it. So that was just a little random tid. So he does mention as well, you mentioned Lemon Pepper Freestyle, BB King Freestyle as well. He says the lights in Universal Building keep flickering. You know, money just keep coming in, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that's Drake alluding to knowledge of, you know, the breakdown of the major label infrastructure?
I mean, I think that's a thing. Like, I mean, I would be surprised if he's not aware of his power in that situation, because, I mean, like, label execs, we like to give him a lot of power. You know, we like to be like, okay, these labels just can do what they want and they control the music we listen to. And to some degree, that's true. But I think in this moment, like, Drake does have that power to be like, you know what, guys, I can take at least a big section of you big artists along with me on this ride to just say, you know, F these major labels, and let's try. And like, I mean, I know I'm at a different position, but I can show you that there is a way out. And I think in my mind, at least, I'm like thinking, has he been maneuvering this way since the start of his career? Like, always been buddy buddy with these labels and, you know, these big corporate interests. But has he been doing that to get to a point where he can say, look, now at least you're equal, or I'm on top of you, and there's nothing you can really do. And actually, I think that's why people are talking about, you know, this move like so much, is because it can signify a lot to the way we view the music industry.
100%. I wish there was more transparency over the actual money movements, because, and so people could be a bit more personally invested. I've always said opening up stock options on artists should be a thing, because a lot of these artists do have LLCs. And I think that, you know, imagine if Nicki Minaj publicly listed her LLC with all of the support she has, she could actually leverage quite a significant market force and interest. And that's the kind of thing I want to see artists do. You know, I want to see OVO on there. Like, these men and women who are hitting mogul status, I mean, I say men and women, but anyway, they're hitting mogul status, they have huge stock options. That's why they talk about it. They said, you know, like, even Beyonce's there, like, pay me in equity. Like, this is the new flex, right? The fact that Beyonce affects stock, Rihanna affects stock, Jay-Z affects stock. Nicki affected Fendi stock so much that they gave her $10 million up front for a capsule collection, because they just knew what was going to happen. And this is what I'm saying. Like, I want to see artist ownership, but like with those big LLCs they've got, like, break it up. Like, let's redistribute those billions that are in there and floating around. Because I think these artists are big enough that we would invest in them in that way. I actually would. Like, I would genuinely invest in a seed fund, in a seed round, like, for like Drake projects or Nicki projects, because I just know the impact. And I think that kind of squares that circle we brought up in the Kanye West episode, episode 4 with Faye OJ, where we talk about valuing Black art and Black capitalism. Perhaps the sword that Black culture can leverage against it is, if you can't beat them, literally join them. Like, literally join them and follow in the footsteps of Jay-Z. But you see, Tidal wasn't called, because Jay-Z is a mogul on such a different level. He didn't need to, all of his companies don't need to have, like, I'm Jay-Z and I rap. Does that make sense? He doesn't have to do that. But I think that it's about high time someone did. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's the sort of trailblazing things I cross my fingers and my pinky toes that Nicki Minaj does, because she's got that kind of a fan base that she can, the crazy people. And I don't know if you know, guys, before I wrap up this topic, I just wanted to say, like, there is such a thing as Barb Banks. So these are actual funds that Barbs from around the world pay into, so that when Nicki Minaj releases singles, they're able to buy them. Now, that whole mass buying thing, BTS stands, BTS Army as well, they also do the same thing. Other fan bases have tried to emulate it. But these two fan bases, Barbs and BTS, are able to leverage funding rounds into the tens of thousands of dollars. That's crazy. That is such untapped potential that's just sitting there. Because the only way people can support artists is by bloody going to Spotify or pressing 99p or 1099 on iTunes. I just feel we can engage more in this industry, and then that would distribute it and make it more equitable.
Would you not say, though, going to their shows is investing in them?
Yeah, but the insurers are making money off the shows. Then there's the stadium. Then there's the light show. Then there's the crew. Then there's the caterers. Then there's the transport. Then there's everything else. Like, yeah, it's a bag, and it's a big bag, but the fan, I went to a Bryson Tiller virtual concert. Sorry, Dom, you can jump in, but like, I went to a Bryson Tiller virtual concert the other week, had the best time in my bedroom, and I paid like 15 quid. I 100% know at least £10 of that directly went to Bryson Tiller. And I liked that.
That's it. That's it.
Who else cares about that? Like, who else cares about the artist? Sorry, Dom.
The fans.
But do they? Like,
well, the Barbs do.
When Tidal came out and they were saying, okay, we're going to allow artists to get a bit more money, to make a bit more money, people were like, but the average person was thinking, well, these people make enough money anyway.
Because they've been socialized into, they're socialized consumers. They believe that. Like, people, if you go on Twitter, people genuinely believe that their little Spotify stream has decided that someone's a flop or not. It's like, honey, it was out of your hands. Like, it was all out of your hands. You don't do anything. You don't even make a dent of relevance. It's just the fact that there are deals are made in batch. So you're not an individual. You're just a Spotify audience member. One of 250 something million. That's literally all you are. So it doesn't matter. It's the impressions. It doesn't matter whether or not you stream, really. You could stop streaming and artist labels would still make money. Yeah. And that's the thing that's missing. That shouldn't be the thing. That is an inflated market. It should be that fans should have direct access to equity, like the good days.
But the good what I was going to say is, like, I mean, I definitely hear you. And I think that there is something to be said about music being devalued so much to this point where we're having these conversations of, like, you know, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, the streams actually even matter to, like, an artist's bank account, which, I mean, it's been a long time in making, but it doesn't seem like anything's going to change in that regard. But I do see, like, on the other hand, like, there is this movement towards what you've been saying, Blessing. Really, I do generally actually believe that in the future, there's going to be more of artists, you know, putting themselves out there to be essentially bought as a commodity in various ways apart from the music. And I feel like we're going to see this through the NFTs we talked about earlier, about where you can literally go and you can buy and own a stake in like, say, the artwork of an artist for their new project. You can own like 50% of that stake if you want to. And, like, you know, you could sell that stake. You can do different things. You could, like, I mean, I've heard different ways that you can distribute your own stake and then, like, claim that back on your own terms. Just a lot of different stuff is happening. And also, when we talk about those bigger artists as well, it's only ever the bigger artists. Let's just make a little point. It's none of the smaller artists, which we got to, like, at some point acknowledge that it's a lot of these debates only really matter to bigger artists. But I see the Travis Scott's making deals with McDonald's, you know, all these different companies, and they are, I think, slowly behind a network. I think there's probably these conversations that maybe we're not all privy to of, like, I mean, what are these labels really doing for us? Like, what are they doing for us? Like, we can still get these sponsorships on our own terms.
We can still get these endorsements. We can still do it all. And I think that's the future. And Drake very well may lead the way in that respect.
He's got to do it.
Yeah, he's got deals with Nike. He's been doing that. And I'm excited to see what the certified lover boy brings us. I have said multiple times, including on our episode 4 guest podcast, The Motion, I talked about, you know, personally for me, I think the only people who can lead us out of this place we're in are, well, I might be able to add in some few other artists, but Drake and Nicki, they're my stock options. They're my big picks. Those two are the ones that I think are innovative and resourced enough in terms of active fan base, or in Drake's case, active resources through his corporate connections, to take us to a different place. I really believe that. And I'm excited. I am genuinely excited to see how, you know, Nicki especially, she's got such an interesting market to bounce back in, because they just took her brand and then just watered it down to like the Just Add Water for Nicki Minaj version. And everyone's sipping the like female rapper Kool-Aid, pretending it's good when they know it's not. But it's fine, like, because so many labels are making money, and like, they're like, well, one label's making money, but, you know, so many different companies make money. And so people are happy right now. It's working. But my 100% view is that when, I'm not going to say if and when, because I rebuke those retirement claims, but when she returns, it's going to be, to compete in this market is interesting. And what she does, I think, will then be the next Pink Print, because it's interesting. Same way with Drake. What he does will be the next blueprint for other artists like him that know they bring a lot of value, but don't know how to get out. You know, I think, because I don't think necessarily everyone can model their career on like Drake in the same way. I don't think that his career is, whereas someone like Nicki, she just started on MySpace. So you can actually follow her blueprint, her pink print in a different way. I know, but what I'm saying is that Drake is a skillful networker. He knows how to network the room. So I think people who are in the room right now, like the Givians maybe, they're the ones that I think will be really listening and watching every step Drake takes, because they're in the room, but they want to know what to say in the meeting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what the value I think he has to offer right now, you know, amongst other things.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much, team. This has been a great episode. This wraps up season one of Don't Drink the Pickle Juice. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to, first of all of my guests who have attended and shared their thoughts. They're all badass. Make sure that you follow them and support their project. Secondly, Transmission Roundhouse and Dom, hi, for being the sound engineer, making sure everything is smooth and slick. Thank you so much for this first season. And then, truly, like, you have coped with me being ridiculously, let's just call it late, but it gets done.
it's all like in a struggle of a creative, like, just time management. We all have that issue.
It's our gripe, but I've loved this season, you guys. Honestly, season two is going to be lit. Make sure that you watch all of the socials and check it out so you don't miss anything. And thirdly, I wanted to thank Nicki Minaj, because without her telling us all not to drink the pickle juice, you know, where would we be?